A huge voter registration campaign is underway for Hispanic Heritage Month. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. The voter registration campaign is being driven by the Texas Victory Project, an organization that advocates for the working poor and other local and national organizations. The goal? Register 1,000 voters statewide to increase turnout in the 2018 primary and general election. I talked with Claudia Sanchez and Arnoldo Alonso, political director and state director of the Texas Victory Project, about their efforts.
Basically, a lot of the people that have attended our events, they are people that sometimes it's the first time getting engaged in the political process. And that's one of our goals, that we want to engage the community. We want them to learn the whole process and how we can empower them to make sure that they are, you know, holding our elected officials accountable, that they're voting, that they're getting their family and their friends registered, and that, you know, we're all, you know, making sure that we're talking about the issues that are impacting our working class communities.
Arnoldo, what kind of issues are those that you're particularly focusing on?
We are asking people what is the most important issue they and their family are facing. I think a lot of times progressives tend to talk to voters and not talk with them. And we're knocking on neighborhoods with the highest poverty rate, neighborhoods with the lowest turnout, and talking to voters who we call low propensity voters, unlikely. And what we're finding out, it's higher wages for working people. It is Social Security. It is health care. It is being able to reform our criminal justice system. And when we're talking to voters and they cannot pay their bills, they're letting us know. We tend to listen to them and just have a simple conversation. And immigration does come up, but the biggest issue is how am I going to pay my bills? I'm working two jobs, mijo. Y ni con eso la puedo hacer. I've been making $9.10 for the past 6 years, mijo. Y es duro. And when you're having those conversations with the electorate, you tend to realize that whatever the talking points are nationally, they tend not to reflect the reality on the ground. And our biggest push is to be able to shift the paradigm and to be able to say, hey, like, these are the issues that matter to people in Claver County, people in Edgewood, people in Brownsville, people in McAllen, people also in the colonias. So I know in the Texas State Legislature there was a big issue when it came to funding of las colonias. And people want better roads. They want better lighting. They want to feel safe in their own neighborhoods. So when they want to feel safe, that comes from criminal justice and immigration. So those are the biggest issues. It is, how do I pay my bills? How do I protect my family? And how do we get a little piece of this thing called the American dream?
Ultimately, all the issues that are more along the political spectrum, people, again, like Arnoldo was saying, they're focusing on the bottom line. How do I pay the bills? I need to make ends meet. How do you convince people that starting off by just registering to vote and getting off the ground by actually having a voice in the issues, how do you convince people that that's the best place to start to actually work to change their lives?
Yeah, so that's only part of the process. Of course, getting registered, getting deputized, going out to vote, but also just going out, you know, and having town halls in our community. That way people know what's happening, what's with their neighbors, what's happening in the political spectrum, and how they can make those changes. We don't only want to win elections where we have candidates listening to us, but also having someone that will be out there, you know, fighting for them, and that we can win through legislation as well, making those changes that will impact them directly.
So for Hispanic Heritage Month, you began this campaign to register 1,000 voters from September 15th through October 15th. So what kind of progress have you made?
So the progress that we've made is we've been able to register 160 we have a lot of partner organizations. So now it's like, hey, let's go and let's register high schools. Let's register at the college campuses. We've been blessed. Our biggest blessing has been the city of San Benito. Small town, less than 22,000. And the city, the mayor, the school board, LULAC, and 30 volunteers attended. Over 30 volunteers attended our voter registration training. And they're fully committed. The Catholic Church, the local Catholic Church, is fully invested. And right there in itself, it's going to be 300 to 400 to 500 people that are going to get registered to vote in San Benito. That will put us at, if my math is good, I majored in English. so if we have 160 plus 300, that's 460. And if it's 500, that puts us at 660 or 760. And then that means that myself included and Claudia and all of our volunteers just has to hit the remainder and we'll hit go. If we don't hit go, we're still going to register people because Hispanic issues are not just relevant for 1 month. So I think that if we don't hit go, we're still going to go at it because it is extremely important that individuals don't just get registered to vote. Like our biggest thing is many organizations do voter registration and they go and they're like, oh, we registered 10,000 people. The question is, how many of those people did you turn out? So our goal is not to register people. Our goal is to be able to increase the electorate and the participation and also ask everybody that we register to vote, are you willing and able to become a poll worker? Are you willing and able to become a precinct chair? Regardless of party, if it's Republican, it's Republican. If it's Democrat, it's Democrat. I think we need to be able to build the political capital that our people deserve. Can you be the community leader that your body needs? Like, can you be that precinct chair? Our precinct chairs are not precinct chairs. They're community organizers. And we have 21 of them who are in charge of one thing alone. It's hosting one town hall, finding out the issue that matters the most to their community, and fixing that issue in 1 year. That's it. And it can be as simple as one pothole. Everybody knows that one pothole in el barrio. It's like, no, espérate, move to the left. You know, it's right there. It can be as simple as that, or it can be as complex as providing free Wi-Fi. Or it can be something in the regards to ensuring, like in Brownsville, my mother, who became our first precinct chair. It is having...
She had to do it for her mijo.
Yes, I was like, andale madre, porque si no, no tenemos nadie. You got voluntold, madrecita. La quiero mucho. Pero a lo que voy es, we found out that in our neighborhood, most of the people who live in our precinct are the cooks and they're the janitors of our public school system. La gente es trabajadora, and the issue that really impacted me personally was when we found out that they get hired in August and they get fired in May and they don't receive any type of compensation. What does a 55-year-old lady do? She can't work at Schlitterbahn. She can't be a security guard. She can't work at these teleperformance or call centers that are hiring people but only seasonal. So if you break it down, if they make less than $9.50 an hour, which they do, they're making $4, $3 an hour because they're not working those 3 months. And I just don't understand how you can be an elected official and not know that that issue is going on. I don't understand how you can be a worker and not protest, but I come from a privilege aspect. I'm educated. I got a degree. And when I asked them, they're like, mijo, ¿y si me corran? ¿Qué? Ese es el único trabajo que yo tengo. So it's understanding fear. Because we can think, well, we have the best ideas. We have degrees. You know, just go there and lucha, madre. You know, go and protest. Pero si me corran, mijo, ¿qué? So how do you deal with that? How do you fix that? With having fear and the lack of education in one component and having complacency in the other. And for me, I have no answer. I won't lie to you because there is a lot of employees and they're not unionized. And if you don't have that, how do you fix it? And the only answer for me that I have is behind closed doors and talking to the elected officials, for we don't have the muscle right now. And it's dealing with that. And when you speak with the electorate, you tend to realize that everything you learn, you have to push a little bit to the side because there's a different reality on the ground.
Arnoldo Alonso and Claudia Sanchez are with the Texas Victory Project talking about their drive to register 1,000 voters statewide during Hispanic Heritage Month. One of the candidates seeking those 2018 votes is Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke, who's running against Senator Ted Cruz. O'Rourke has a plan for stopping the Trump administration from being able to seize privately owned lands along the border to build the wall the president wants between the U.S. and Mexico. Texas Public Radio's Ryan Poppy has details.
The Protecting the Property Rights of Border Landowners Act, co-authored by O'Rourke and Arizona Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego, would amend the Immigration and Nationality Act, making it impossible for the Secretary of Homeland Security and the Attorney General to use eminent domain to acquire land in the path of a U.S. border wall along the U.S.-Mexico border.
Much of it will be on U.S. property owners' land. Two-thirds of the land along the U.S.-Mexico border is private or state-owned, with most of that falling in Texas.
O'Rourke says he's encouraged by the support he's seen for the bill from across the aisle, like San Antonio Republican Congressman Will Hurd, who opposes the construction of a border wall. The total cost to build a border wall stretching along the U.S.-Mexico border is estimated at $20 billion. It's an issue that's likely to become a divisive topic during the 2018 Senate race between O'Rourke and Republican Senator Ted Cruz, who supports construction of a wall. Ryan Poppy, Texas Public Radio News.
Coming up next on Fronteras, President Trump's cap on refugees may prompt them to try getting into the U.S. through border cities like San Diego.
We're on the border, and the refugees that are not being admitted, they still may show up on our border by other means.
And why a major toy maker wants in on the quinceañera, the rite of passage for many Hispanic girls. We'll explore those stories after this. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to Fronteras. Millions of refugees around the world have been displaced by turmoil in their home countries. Every year, the U.S. president gets to decide how many of them come to America. For the second time since he took office, President Trump is reducing the cap on refugees, down from 50,000 to 45,000. That's a dramatic difference from the Obama administration's previous goal to have America accept 110,000 refugees this year. It's also the lowest cap since the Refugee Act of 1980. KPBS reporter Taryn Mento sat down with the head of a refugee settlement agency in San Diego to learn how federal policies have impacted resettlement there and how this may affect resettlement agencies across the country.
This time last year, San Diego County was the number one destination for refugees.
San Diego has now received more than any other city in the U.S.
626 Syrian refugees come to our community. That is more than any other city.
San Diego County resettled more refugees than any other region in the U.S. last year.
But as the fiscal year ends, that's changing.
Describe to me the current state of resettlement in San Diego right now.
Well, it's quiet.
That's Robert Moser, the executive director of Catholic Charities in San Diego. The organization uses federal dollars to help refugees get established during their first 3 months in the U.S.
Usually August and September is the busiest time of year because it's the end of the fiscal year. But the federal ceiling on refugee numbers was reached many months ago.
The federal ceiling affects how busy resettlement agencies will be each year. As it grows or drops, so too does San Diego's share. Moser pointed to last fiscal year when then-President Barack Obama raised the ceiling.
Well, last year, the ceiling was raised by the previous administration to 85,000. So that was 15,000 more than we had normally done. And they were all coming towards the end of the year. So, not to in the context of the hurricanes and everything you're having now, it was a perfect storm in terms of large volume, large families, quick turnaround time. So agencies would hire new staff, work overtime, get volunteers and community support to help out.
This fiscal year, agencies were bracing for even more arrivals when Obama wanted to boost the ceiling to 110,000. But after the election, President Trump cut that to 50,000, reducing San Diego's share to the trickle Moser says we're seeing now. The cap for this next fiscal year is expected to be 45,000. He says this can weaken the resettlement infrastructure because organizations receive funding per refugee, which means a smaller cap can translate into a smaller budget for local resettlement agencies.
When it goes down below a certain level, and particular levels that's being proposed, there will be a lot of resettlement programs across the country that will close. And so then that ability in the future, if there's another large number of refugees coming in, we won't have the system in place.
What's going to happen to resettlement agencies in San Diego?
San Diego typically resettles about 3 to 4% of the national total. So whatever the total ceiling was, we would get 3 to 4%.
But Moser says that percentage could be larger if agencies in other areas close and redirect refugees to our region.
The reality is San Diego has always been a main source of resettlement in the country. And as other programs close down, maybe those refugees that were going to go someplace else would be channeled to San Diego to maintain the infrastructure here.
Regardless of the cap and whether closures elsewhere send more refugees to San Diego, our geographic location means some form of resettlement may continue.
The other aspect is we're on the border, and the refugees that are not being admitted, they still may show up on our border by other means seeking asylum.
Asylum seekers can surrender at a port of entry where they may be detained until a judge decides their fate. If asylum is approved, they enter the U.S. and can access some refugee services. The president cannot set a cap on asylum.
Taryn Mento of KPBS brought us that story. The year 2002 might not mean anything to you, but for about 2 million American girls, it's the year they were born. That means they're turning 15 in 2017, and many are celebrating with a quinceañera. It's the rite of passage party usually celebrated by Hispanic girls. The celebration is similar to a sweet 16, but often much more extravagant. In fact, as KUT's Joy Diaz reports, the quinceañera industry in the U.S. is a billion-dollar business, and it's no wonder that toy maker Mattel is trying to get a piece of the action with its quinceañera Barbie.
Betsaida Esquivel just turned 15. She's planning her quinceañera and tells me that whether you only spend a couple thousand dollars on your party or 20 or 30,000 like most families do, almost all parties have a few key elements.
A dress.
Big, sparkly, like a princess.
Shoes, doll, and like all the like pillows and books that it comes with.
The doll is very important because traditionally, during the father-daughter dance, the dad will present his birthday girl with her last doll, or última muñeca. Mattel, the toy manufacturer, wants that doll to be a Barbie. In a promotional video, Mattel designer Carlisle Nuera describes the dress on Mattel's latest release, Quinceañera Barbie.
Her bodice has a sheer overlay with a beautiful silver holographic glitter print, floral shapes and beautiful swirls. Her skirt also features purple taffeta with vertical tulle.
Quinceañera Barbie actually looks a lot like Betsaida Esquivel, but that purple dress is bothering Yesenia Esquivel, Betsaida's mother, because her daughter's theme color is coral.
They need to put up a website where you can personalize your quinceañera Barbie. Then the girls would go crazy. They would choose the color of the hair, the color of the dress, the color of the eyes.
Mattel and a lot of other places are just sort of scratching the surface on it.
Aliyah Gauss is with Latinworks,
an Austin advertising agency. But, she says, some companies are evolving and becoming more culturally sensitive.
In the past, there were a lot of stereotypical sort of Hispanic ads. These days, consumers will call that out immediately.
These days, there are multiple examples of the quinceañera tradition becoming more mainstream. There's Coca-Cola's Share a Coke campaign featuring a quinceañera in one of its ads, and Disney is marketing its princess-themed cruises to quinceañeras. Whether the quinceañera party is taking place in the home or on the high seas, you can bet there will be a last doll or última muñeca. Will the doll be a Barbie? That may just depend on the color of the dress. For Fronteras, I'm Joy Diaz.
And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced the broadcast. Michelle Dubac is our executive producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.